Dr. Milton Wolf is running for the U.S. Senate in Kansas, and he's trying to unseat a well-known incumbent, three-term Senator Pat Roberts. A radiologist, Wolf is a graduate of the University of Kansas School of Medicine. Dr. Wolf is a long-standing critic of Obamacare, and he's written a book, First, Do No Harm. The president's cousin explains why his Hippocratic oath requires him to oppose Obamacare. He's embraced by the Tea Party. He's been married for 23 years to his wife, and the couple has two children. This is his first run for public office, and I should point out that Senator Roberts declined our request to appear in a debate with Milton Wolf. And Dr. Wolf, so good to have you here. Welcome.
Steve, thanks for having me.
Well, have you and Barack Obama, how are you related exactly to our president?
You know, isn't that the craziest thing
it's
of all?
It's the craziest thing.
The next Ted Cruz is Barack Obama's own unapologetic conservative cousin. You know, I didn't know that Barack Obama and I were related until about 2008, somewhere around that time. My mother was reading a newspaper article about Senator Obama, who was running for the presidency, and he was describing his great uncle Charlie Payne, and you may remember, who served in World War II, helping to open the concentration camps.
Right.
And my mom is reading this, and just her jaw drops, and she says, "This is my Uncle Charlie." And my mom grew up in Wichita, and you may remember, of course, that the Dunhams,
would
be Barack Obama's mother's family.
Are from down that neck of the woods.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So my mother and Stanley Ann grew up together as young girls. Now, there's a generation difference in the family, though Barack is 10 years older than me. I'm actually a generation ahead of him in the family. So my mom and Barack Obama's grandmother, Madeline, were first cousins. But with the age difference, my mother was closer in age to Stanley Ann. They played together as young girls. They grew up together until the Dunhams moved away. And then my mom lost track of Stanley Ann. She started doing kind of world traveling and whatnot. My mom stayed in touch with Madeline for years. And she knew Stanley Ann had a son, but didn't even know the name at the point in time when she's reading that article.
Well, do you guys have family reunions? Can you hang out with the president? How does this work in your family, Dr. Wolf?
I'd never met him until 2010. By the time that he and I met, he was, of course, already the president, and I was the arch nemesis of Obamacare. It makes for an interesting meeting.
Well, where did you meet him?
It was actually in Kansas City. You know, I was actually driving in central Kansas. I grew up in Lyons. I was driving in central Kansas one night, and I get a phone call. And when caller ID comes up on your phone and somebody announces that they're from the White House, you think it's probably a joke.
Yeah.
And my thought was, who's trying to play this one on me? And they said, no, the president's coming to town. He'd like to meet you. And, of course, by this point, I'm already writing columns for the Washington Times, doing Fox News, and have been very public and very vocal against Obamacare. And, I thought it was a joke until they were really able to confirm it in my mind. And then I realized it reminded me of hearing my name called over the intercom in high school. The principal's calling me to the office, and I must have done something.
So was he aware of who you were when you met, and how did that go?
Oh, certainly. Like I said, that was our first time to meet. And most of it was just simply kind of a family time to catch up. I mean, you know, his mother has passed away. My mother has since passed away. He adored his mother just like I adored mine, and I think this was a kind of a chance for our two moms to reunite in a way through their sons, and there certainly is the family element of that. Now, it doesn't take away from the fact that I think he's the worst president in our lifetime. In fact, I think he's probably the worst president in our history, and I'm one of the few people who I've stood toe-to-toe with Barack Obama. I've looked him in the eye, and I've told him he's wrong. And I knew when I did that, I'd pay a price. And believe me, I have. They've harassed me. They've harassed my family. They sent the IRS after us to harass us, believe it or not.
Huh.
At the end of the day, by the way, the IRS had to pay an interest penalty to us, not the other way around. And I don't think that happens too often.
And they've harassed you. Who's they, and what have they done to harass you?
Well, when the IRS, for example, it seemed like a trivial thing almost at the time, but they withheld our income refund, our tax income refund. I don't even remember the amount. And people would joke, "Oh, it's got to be Barack doing this to you." And I said, "No, the president doesn't do this to somebody, even if I oppose his policies." And we could never bring ourselves to believe that that was true, but that the government could be behind this. It was anything other than coincidental. But then the IRS could never explain why they were withholding our tax refund, and it went for months, and it had to go to arbitration. And they said to us, "We've never seen anything like this. We can't explain it, but we're going to pay you an interest penalty and get you your money." But they wouldn't admit wrongdoing. And now, about the same time, the IRS audited my business, and we got a clean bill of health. And then, about the same time, the White House tried to get me fired. And
fired from your job?
Fired from my job.
As a radiologist?
Not as a radiologist, as a columnist at the Washington Times.
Okay.
And they called my editor and they said that you need to drop him. And now, first of all, it's pretty staggering that a White House would call any editor and say that you should get rid of any columnist. Now, they never contested any facts that I gave. They can certainly disagree with any opinion I gave, but they didn't even bother to do that. They just said they should get rid of me.
Huh. Milton Wolf is our guest. He's a Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate in Kansas. The primary is coming up on August 5th. Dr. Wolf, this is your first run for public office. You know, why go for the U.S. Senate right away? Why not try for, you know, lower office to get some political experience and then try to move up the ladder?
Well, I don't want a career in politics. You're right. I'm a doctor. I'm not a politician. I think we need more senators like Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rand Paul. And you know what's interesting about those three senators? Not one of them served in an elected office before they went to the United States Senate. Now, I think that's a feature, not a bug. They're not beholden to any party bosses. No party boss got them into that Senate, and no party boss can take them out, which means mm-hmm. they can operate on principle.
So would you be a U.S. senator in the mold of a Ted Cruz if you're elected to the U.S. Senate, Doctor?
Those that call me the next Ted Cruz, I think that's probably a fair description. I think I might be a little more in the mold of Ronald Reagan. My formative years were the Reagan years. And one of the things I admire so much about him is he always had the sunny disposition. He was always optimistic that we could solve problems. But you know, you realize that he pushed through most of his Reagan revolution through a Congress that was democratically controlled. People say, hey, what difference can one senator make? And I've heard even one of our own congressmen say, well, you can't lead with half of one-third of the government. And frankly, I find that offensive. You can lead with courage is what you can do. And the way Ronald Reagan did it is he went and he spoke to the people. And you get the people on your side and to
understand
what's going on. But arguably,
Dr. Wolf, if your model is Ted Cruz would have a hard time, it seems to me, based on what you read about him, forming the kind of bipartisan consensus that Ronald Reagan used to get passage of many of his programs.
Well, that may be. But again, I'm a doctor. I'm not a politician. And I'll tell you why that's important. You know, no one judges a doctor by their intentions or their speeches or their promises or anything of that nature. They judge us by our results. But frankly, that's probably true of just about everybody who's not a politician.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think we need to end this era of career politicians. You know, I believe in term limits, and I've limited myself to 2 terms. By the way, while I do that, I'm going to continue to practice medicine right here in Kansas. I'll obviously have to do that part-time and as a volunteer, but that's okay. It's my calling, and I think that's why God put me on this earth, is to serve patients.
Why do you think you'll have time to be a doctor and be a U.S. senator?
Well, in the same way that Dr. Rand Paul is practicing medicine still, the same way Dr. Tom Coburn did and Dr. Bill Frist before them.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I think it's important that anybody who goes to Washington stays grounded in who they are, why they went there in the first place. And if you go to make a career in politics, you know, look at Senator Pat Roberts. He's been there for 47 years. I don't think anybody should be there for 47 years. You know, God expected Moses to get things sorted out in 40. but what I think is important about somebody who actually has a life outside of politics is it's not all about being reelected. And these people who've been running for the student council since they were in kindergarten and they've been running for the Congress since they were in college,
yeah,
they have to get reelected or they lose their career, and that has become a downfall in both parties.
You're a conservative. Pat Roberts, the incumbent and your chief rival in this nomination race, is also a conservative. At least that's how he's rated by the National Journal, which does these annual ratings of members of Congress in terms of liberal to conservative. In fact, Pat Roberts was ranked as the 8th most conservative senator last year. Why isn't that good enough?
Well, if only it were true. You know, he's been in Washington for 47 years, and he quotes in that rating itself, quotes, only 1 year. Now, I think all the other years that he's been there are important. So he quotes, for example, Heritage Action. And Heritage, of course, is a great organization. And they have given him where he calls himself one of the top conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
But his lifetime rating at Heritage, he won't tell you what that is. That's in the low 70s. Before I came along, his score at Heritage Action was a 65. Before I came along, his score at Club for Growth was a 55. At Freedom Works, it was a 54. Now, that's not even remotely conservative. You know, at that same time, Senator John McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham, and nobody would call them solid conservatives. They were scoring in the 70s, and Pat Roberts was scoring in the 50s.
And in fact, in 2005, Doctor, the National Journal ranked Senator Roberts as the 38th most conservative, going back a few years, again, last year being ranked as the 8th most conservative, to go to your point.
And that's it. The career politicians, they have election year conversions, but then they have post-election year reconversions.
So you would have voted differently than him on which major bills that you can point to?
I'll tell you some of the big ones that are probably most important. Number one, Pat Roberts voted for Barack Obama's $600 billion fiscal cliff tax hike. That affected 80% of Kansans. I would have voted against that. Pat Roberts voted to raise our debt ceiling.
You would have gone off the fiscal cliff.
Well, no. What I would have done is said I would have voted just like all of our Kansas representatives in the House who said that was a tax increase and an increase in spending. You know, that increased spending by, I believe it was $300 million, and it increased taxes by $600 billion. At some point, we have to start being fiscally responsible. You know, our families have to balance their budgets. Our government should do the same.
Well, one way to be fiscally responsible is to raise taxes. Why is that the wrong way to go? We're spending more than we're taking in.
Well, because we're spending too much. Look, and that gets to the second point. Pat Roberts has voted to raise our debt ceiling 11 different times. You know, when he went to Washington, that debt was $340 billion. Today, it's $17.5 trillion. That's the anchor on our economy today.
But when you vote to raise a debt ceiling, Doctor, and you know this, you're just voting to pay bills that Congress has already approved.
Well, when you've been there for 47 years, then you voted to approve those bills, right? Pat Roberts was the deciding vote to save earmark spending. Now, he likes to raise taxes. He likes to raise spending. He likes to raise the debt limit. I'm saying at some point we have to recognize this is unsustainable. Every dollar of debt is a future dollar of taxes, and we're going to put that on our kids and our grandkids. Look, $17 trillion in debt. I agree with Mark Stein on this point. You know, when a nation spends trillions of dollars that are yet to be earned by a generation yet even to be born, that's no longer just a spending crisis or an economic crisis. It's a moral crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're abandoning our children and our grandchildren. I'll tell you, as a doctor, I know most parents would tell you they would rather that they themselves break both of their arms than have to witness their kids breaking just one. But look what we're doing with that debt. And this is a bipartisan debt, mind you. This is Republicans and Democrats who have given us this. But we're putting that on our kids. And at some point, we know it cannot be sustained. And at some point, we have to take a serious look at how we're going to cut back the size of government.
Well, if you're going to cut back the size of government, what are you going to cut? A lot of experts say that if you want to make a sizable dent in spending, you've got to eventually go after programs that some folks view as sacred cows: education spending, national defense, social programs of one kind or another, even Social Security. What about that?
Well, let's be very clear here. The only solution to that $17.5 trillion debt, you can't tax your way out of it, and you can't even cut your way out of it. The one thing you can do is you can grow your way out of it. Now, Ronald Reagan had four pillars of Reaganomics. It was lower tax rates, less regulations, less spending, and strong dollar monetary policy. Obamanomics is exactly opposite on all four counts.
But Ronald Reagan also voted to increase taxes, though. He sided with the tax increasers more than once, and you know that too.
Well, overall, his taxes went down under Reagan. Did he make some of those compromises that you're talking about along the way? Yes, of course.
And would you be willing to do that as a U.S. senator?
I'm not going to vote for a tax increase.
I think we're
taxed too much.
So even an approach, a compromise approach, which would say that to deal with the national debt, we will do sizable cuts in spending and we will increase taxes somewhat to sort of get our fiscal house in order, you would vote against a plan like that?
A plan that takes its eye off the ball. Because the only way out of that $17.5 trillion debt is to grow our economy. You grow our economy with lower tax rates, less regulations, less spending. So if we want to solve that debt, we're not going to do it with a tax increase. We're not going to do it with a spending cut. We're going to have to do it by growing our economy. Think about this. Our economy right now is dismal. Frankly, it's been that way for some time. During the Reagan Revolution, we had a quarter century of prosperity that created 25 million jobs. You realize we came off of the gold standard in 1971. Up until that point, our average annual growth, our GDP growth rate, since the beginning of our country until 1971, year after year, decade after decade, centuries, was about 4% growth rate. Now, the difference between 4% growth rate and what we have today is the difference between prosperity and squalor. How do we get back to that? Again, it's those basics. We don't have to create a new roadmap. We need to recognize what works, and we need to do it.
A lot of folks think the economy's beginning to track in the right direction. You know, the job rate is picking up. Job creation is up. The stock market's at record levels, Doctor. Some folks say that maybe that's such a bad record at all, given where we were back in at the end of 2008.
Well, considering we take a longer view of this, The next two decades after 1971, we dropped to about half of that growth rate, from 4% down to about 2%. And then enter George W. Bush and Barack Obama, down now to about an average of about 1% growth rate. In fact, our last quarter was a negative growth rate, and we're going backwards. Look, there are obviously success stories and there are obviously problems, and there will always be both. And in Kansas, we're blessed. We have a better economy than national, than what we see around the nation. We have a better employment rate, for example, than around the nation. But people are struggling, you know, and the burdens that we put on them are unfair and undue.
Dr. Milton Wolf is our guest. He's running for the U.S. Senate in Kansas for the Republican nomination. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Michael from Ottawa, Kansas. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Dr. Wolf, you're going to run across lots and lots of people in the Senate who have views different from yours, sometimes diametrically opposed. How will you work with such people?
Mike, that's a great question, and I think the answer is very similar to how we work in the hospital. There's often in medicine no one right answer, and we come up with different solutions to problems, and in fact, you can certainly imagine a lot of egos in hospitals. But when in the end of the day, we have to do what's right by the patient. And again, nobody judges a doctor by their intentions or flowery speeches or anything else. I'm going to do what I believe is right. I'm going to abide by the Constitution. I'm really not going there to make 99 friends. I don't want to be a part of that Washington crowd, that Tea Party,
the establishment.
Yeah. I'm talking about the wine drinking crowd and holding your pinky in the air and getting invited to the right parties. That's never been my thing. I really do take more of the Ted Cruz philosophy here. I'm going there to kick in the doors, tear down the drapes, and auction off the silver and the china.
And you're willing to cut what? Let's go back to that point, Dr. Wolf. What would you be willing to cut to balance the federal budget? Give me an example of a tough call you're willing to make.
Well, I think why don't we look at Article 1, Section 8 and see what the enumerated powers are. And why don't we first focus on anything that's outside of those. You could start cutting even across the board, and you can't tell me that there's not an agency. Look at how many families in Kansas and how many businesses in Kansas have had to make do with less, and I'm certain our government can do that. We can find that in healthcare. You can find the wasted spending, and a lot of that comes because of the wasted work they make us do that doesn't do anything to serve a patient. So why don't we remove some of that waste, which removes some of the costs? And these are substantial costs, believe it or not. I mean, take, for example, in my mammography practice. I'm a radiologist. I practice – a large part of my practice is mammography.
Yeah.
So I do breast biopsies. Well, they make us jump through a whole lot of hoops before doing these biopsies in ways that are not beneficial to the patient. Why don't we cut some of that, which cuts the expense out of that?
But, doctor, with all due respect, over the years covering politics, I've heard about 10,000 politicians saying that we're going to balance the budget by cutting waste in government. And we both know that's not going to happen. Is there that much waste you can balance the budget? What I'm looking for is, what are you going to cut program-wise, dollar-wise, that's going to help the federal government balance this budget like you want to do?
Well, again, any of those programs, I think every single program needs to be looked at.
Defense included.
Every single program needs to be looked at. I will keep repeating, though, the way to solve our deficit and the way to solve our debt is for economic growth. So we have
cut taxes.
We've got to cut taxes, cut regulation, cut spending. That's what we've got to do. And strong dollar monetary policy, which may be more important than the other three.
You know, a lot of folks, conservatives say cutting taxes is sort of the magic mantra here. We're seeing an example of it play out in Kansas right now. Governor Brownback a couple of years ago cut taxes, and critics are saying we're not seeing the growth, we're not seeing the job creation that he promised when we did it.
Well, that's an interesting thing to say, though, because Kansas, of course, is Kansas politics and not really the bearing of the United States Senate. But I do think the governor and the legislators deserve credit for the economic policies that have brought us a lower unemployment rate in Kansas than the rest of the country, and they certainly deserve credit for that. There's some criticism that there's not enough – that the revenue has dropped off. Well, that's, of course, what happens when you leave the money in the Kansans' pocket so they can spend it on their own. Unfortunately, we've seen the federal government jump in and gobble up those taxes. And in fact, Secretary Nick Jordan was describing one of the problems of the revenue here in Kansas, he directly and repeatedly described that it was the result of Barack Obama's fiscal cliff tax hike,
mm-hmm.
that $600 billion tax hike. Well, Pat Roberts shouldn't have voted for that. That's hurting Kansans.
You want to cut, make no mistake about it, you want to eliminate and repeal Obamacare.
Yes, absolutely.
You would replace it with what?
and I'm so glad you asked this question, because Republicans all say they're against Obamacare. If you have an R behind your name and you've ever seen a poll, you're going to say you're against Obamacare. But it's not enough to just be against things. You need to offer positive solutions. I wrote a plan called Patient Care, and I'd urge your listeners to go on my website, which is MiltonWolf.com. At the top of every page is Patient Care. You can download the PDF, read the HTML. It's patient-centered, market-driven health care. You know, here's the novel concept. We finally make a health care plan that is centered around patients rather than politicians. You know, the politicians, the bureaucrats should not go into those examination rooms and limit what a doctor can say and do and offer. These decisions need to be made by patients and by doctors instead of by bureaucrats.
And so your plan would do what?
First of all, what I'd like to do is even the playing field with insurance, realizing, of course, that most of when we talk about health care reform, we're really talking about health insurance reform. And, of course, that's the primary thrust of Obamacare. One of the things that is most important is we should even the playing field between buying your insurance through your employer or an individual plan. I would never mandate that you should buy one or the other, but I want you to have the free choice to choose what's best for you. But right now, you face a tax penalty if you want to buy your own insurance plan. And I don't think that treats you with the kind of respect that you deserve as a sovereign citizen, as an adult. So if you have an even playing field, what I suspect most people would do, and again, I wouldn't mandate, but I suspect they'd want to have an individual policy. They'd go to their employer and say, hey, the money you were paying my insurance, I'd like to have that in the form of income, and I want to buy my own. That way, if I change jobs, I can just take my insurance with me. I can buy as much or as little insurance as I want.
Would you require everyone to have insurance, every adult, Dr. Wolf? Is that the way to go?
I think that's unconstitutional. You know, again, we're sovereign American citizens. The government borrows its power from us, not the other way around.
So people who then don't buy insurance and the rest of us have to pay for their care, you would do what?
Well, you know, you can escape reality, but you can't escape the consequences of reality, right? Imagine this. Let's just imagine at least we're never going to get to a solution unless we can imagine what it would look like. So imagine if we were starting from scratch. Well, we have this system that I'm talking about where we remove those mandates and people can buy whatever policy they want across state lines from any company that they want. I suspect what most young people would do starting out life, they'd probably buy a major medical policy, probably with a deductible, let's say around $5,000, and they'd probably pay $100 or actually probably less per month in a premium. Now, insurance should be three things. It should be personal, it should be portable, and it should be affordable. Well, $100 a month is certainly affordable. If you choose to buy your own individual policy and you get to pick what's in it, it's very personal. And it's portable. If you own your own, you can take it job to job. I would encourage but never mandate health savings accounts. The people put money into a health savings account, let's say $100 a month. You build up so you can bridge that gap. $5,000 is a lot of money. But then again, you're probably not going to go bankrupt and lose your livelihood.
And what if somebody doesn't buy health coverage? What do you do? And they get in trouble, have to use the emergency room, and then you and I and a dog named Boo are all paying for it. What do you do about that?
Let me start out by saying a principle of mine that applies not just to health care, but I think any policy that we do in government. And it is a moral principle. It's not a constitutional principle, but I think most would agree with this. We should take care of every American who truly cannot take care of themselves. Now, I think everybody would pretty much agree with that, and I think we can disagree on where we draw that line, but let's always remind ourselves of that principle.
Yeah.
Again, back to this perfect world or this plan that we could get to, the question is how do we get there? If we make this insurance affordable, but those who can't afford to buy it for whatever reason, they're down in the luck, the economy's bad, whatever it is, why don't we allow them to opt into the current Medicaid system like is available to them now? I wouldn't take that away from them. But offer a second option of their choice that we could help to give a premium assistance so they could cover their own insurance, that $100 a month that they've had since they were a kid, let's say, and they can now stay with their own doctor, not get in a government waiting line. And when they get back on their feet, they resume their own payments. Now, I think most people would prefer that because Medicaid is, of course, a government-run system that treats citizens like second-class citizens.
We have a couple phone calls here. Dr. William from Stillwell. William, good morning.
Morning, Doctor. How are you?
Doing great, thank you.
Okay, I want to tease your market-based approach a little bit here. As you know, that the Blue Cross and Blue Shield in 1935 and 37 got an antitrust exemption, which exists to this day, which means they don't have to compete with each other in the marketplace, provided that they were going to be a non-for-profit organization. That changed in 1986 until the Tax Reform Act. But under Dan Rostenkowski, remember that name, right?
Yes.
So let me ask you this question. What is wrong with taking away the antitrust exemption or asking the insurance companies, like in Germany, to stay not-for-profit? What is wrong with that approach?
Okay, I got you. Let me go to Dr. Wolf's answer here.
I think you bring up a great point. In fact, one of the things I wrote about in my book that Steve had mentioned earlier was that Obamacare, the problems of Obamacare, not the beginnings of the problem of our healthcare system. I went through the long history of some of the bad decisions we've made in healthcare long before Barack Obama came along. Look, I'd love to blame every problem on Barack Obama. It's really kind of fun, but it really wouldn't be accurate.
Right.
Even before the 1930s and the 1920s, the government started choosing winners and losers through the American Hospital Association. And you can make the case, or it may make you feel good, that they're helping out certain patients or that they're helping out certain customers of certain companies like the Blue Crosses,
right,
like the Blues. But the problem is what's not seen, and that everybody who's not a patient in that system or not a customer of those companies are forced to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. In fact, that's why at its core, on a fundamental level, when you subsidize from one to another, it reaches an area of immorality, in fact, when you take from one to give to another.
Let me go quickly to one other issue before I lose you here, Dr. Wolf. You favor the fair tax, meaning what exactly? You would eliminate income taxes and raise sales taxes dramatically, or what are you talking about doing?
Look, I want a tax system that meets a fundamental moral concern, that everyone plays by the same set of rules. Our current tax system is not just corrupt, and I believe it is. I believe it's immoral. When you have, for example, the CEO of GE, Jeffrey Immelt, sitting as a close advisor to President Obama in the same year that his corporation, GE, makes a $14 billion profit but pays zero in taxes, and yet the nurse here in Kansas City, the school teacher in Wichita, the farmer in my hometown of Lyons, they're still expected to pay their taxes.
Right.
I'd say that's reached a point of immorality. I'd like a system where we all play by the same set of rules and where the government cannot use a tax code, a 74,000-page tax code, to try to coerce you into doing their bidding or doing what they want you to do.
So you're talking about raising the sales tax then from what, 5, 6, 7% to what, 15, 18, 20%?
What I would do is this would be revenue neutral for most middle-class Americans. It would probably be an advantage for most lower-income Americans, and that is to eliminate the income tax altogether, eliminate the corporate tax, eliminate the capital gains tax, eliminate every federal tax, and replace it with a consumption tax, a sales tax. But that tax is then administered by the state of Kansas and each of the other 49 states.
Mm-hmm.
The state of Kansas gets reimbursed for its efforts of having to collect it, and actually the individual retailers are reimbursed for their efforts. And here's the nice thing. You pay only the amount of taxes you want to pay based on what you want to buy.
We're going to leave our conversation there. Dr. Milton Wolf, again, a candidate, a Republican candidate for the GOP nomination for the U.S. Senate in Kansas. Voters go to the polls on August 5th. Thanks for coming in. Appreciate it, Dr. Wolf.
Thank you very much for having me.
One other candidate seeking the Republican nomination for the U.S. Senate in Kansas is Elvin Zantner of Russell. He drove a semi and worked in an oil field. He's also a disabled vet with a high school education. He describes himself as conservative, and his website proclaims that honesty is always the best policy. Elvin Zantner joins us now from Russell, Kansas, and I should point out that the fourth and final candidate, homemaker DJ Smith of Osawatomie, did not respond to our request for an interview here. And Elvin, I'm going to apologize to you. I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back and continue our conversation here. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Well, as I mentioned before the break, we're now visiting with Elvin Zantner. He's the other candidate, one of the other candidates for the Republican nomination for the U.S. Senate in Kansas. We tried to get the incumbent Pat Roberts on our show. He declined. Elvin Zantner, again, welcome to the show. It's nice to have you.
Thank you, sir.
Tell me about honesty, Al. I gather you feel you aren't hearing much of it coming out of Washington these days. Why is honesty always the best policy? That's the slogan on your website.
Yes, sir. Honesty is always the best policy. And if you look at the lies that come completely out of that presidential area, and I do not call Barack Obama, which is Milton Wolf's cousin, he's going to act just like Barack Obama, and we have problems there. I want we the people, and that's what you folks are, is we the people. I'm just the voice that goes to Washington, takes your word up there, and speaks for we the people, and not for the bureaucrats, not for the corporation. I am for you.
And what do you want to do if you get to the U.S. Senate, Alvin? What's the plan? What's the Alvin Zantner plan for your service in the U.S. Senate?
My service in U.S. Senate is get Mexico, which they have one of my soldiers down there that made a wrong turn, to get them police to the south border, plus send veterans, my Army, my National Guard, down there to police our side. And we do need a large wall, not that junk wire fence down there. And they all need to be treated as criminals. And then on second behalf, I know a lot of people is not going to believe in what I'm just getting ready to say. Fired Up Kansas website. I went and spoke on medical marijuana, and like Colorado has, and leisure marijuana, you might call it, with regulations, with tax. Too much of my money is going to Colorado. We're talking about sales tax here, $70 million since Colorado opened up.
So, Alvin, I'm sorry, do you want to legalize marijuana in Kansas?
Yes, sir, just like Colorado. Too much of my Kansas money, sir, is going to Colorado. $70 million is what they made in a mere short few months. In Colorado.
And so you would legalize, if you were your U.S. Senator, you'd work to legalize marijuana all across the country.
I sure would, to keep our money in our country with regulations just like drinking and driving.
Is that the most important priority you would work on if you went to the Senate, Alvin?
No, and that south border.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm tired of the pink slips going to my military from Barack Obama, which is Milton Wolf's cousin. And I'd rather jump in a pit of rattlesnakes and take my chance of not being bit. And his health care plan, we can't afford Clinton Obama, and I call it death care. We can't afford that as we the people. We cannot afford the one that Milton Wolf said he revised.
Right.
And that one, no, people has their health care.
Okay, I want to go back to the Alvin, just give me a second here. I want to go back to your policy on the border, the U.S.-Mexico border. You want to, what, rebuild the fence down there, or what are you talking about doing?
I'm talking about a nice wall. Putting it up down there, have it manned by even veterans. They get a paycheck. They'd be more glad to do it. I've talked to numerous veterans. I went to the VA in Wichita and in Topeka, and I sat there and I talked to those veterans, and they said, we'd be more glad to sit on that border. We'd be more glad to help the USA out, the country that we love.
How much money do you want to spend on rebuilding that border fence down there? A lot of folks say there's a pretty good fence down there already. How much you want to spend on rebuilding that thing?
I tell you what, sir. A lot of that, it don't have to come from my government money. There's people out there that would get their machinery fired up and say, okay, we've had enough of them coming across that border. Turn them into criminals, get them back.
Mm-hmm.
There is plenty of people out there that would take my cost down, and they would be more than happy to help me on this project.
So you're talking about just engaging with Kansans and taking them down to the border to help you build a new fence.
That's exactly right, sir. That's a fight, and that's a big fight. And any and every American, and I mean that's what Barack Obama, not my president, I will say that right now, any American that isn't an American, because he's after the Americans, sir.
Well, why isn't he your president, Alvin? He's the president of the United States. Why isn't he your president?
I'm going to tell you why. Number one, he got in that office under false pretenses. Number two,
What false pretenses are you talking about?
Well, number one, stealing his records. Furthermore, if his cousin, I don't care if first, second, third, and I'm talking about Milton Wolf, he needs to stay as a doctor. He don't need to be in there helping Barack Obama with another vote. And if he would have been doing his job, he had a plan to get Barack Obama in there. He kept his mouth shut. He messed the U.S., the Americans around, Milton Wolf did. And I will put it this way, sir, and it's pretty much the way that my senator, when I believe in term limits, and Pat Roberts, we got along fine last night.
Did you see Senator Roberts somewhere, Alvin?
I got pictures of Senator Roberts, and they'll go on my website tonight, sir.
Okay. I want to ask you about something else here. You know, Milton Wolf just called for ending income taxes and going to the sales tax for just about everything. He favors something called the fair tax. What do you make of that idea?
I'll tell you what I make of that idea. Yes, I favor ending income tax. I favor getting sales tax, which is going to Colorado, off of legalizing marijuana. I favor that for medical use, sir. There's more sales tax there. I don't believe in corporate farming of that. I believe in my little farmer, family farm, of taking and growing this. And that tremendously will keep my Kansas money in Kansas, sir.
You know, there's a crisis that's engulfed the Veterans Administration, as you well know, Alvin Zantner, and it has to do with waiting lists for care. And I'm wondering what needs to happen to straighten that situation out.
Number one, there's not enough money, and there's not enough staff. I've been visiting these, like Wichita, Topeka. I've been in talking to my soldiers, my veterans, about this. And yes, it's not as Pat Roberts said, and it's not as the good doctor said. They're in trouble, sir. And like the VA administration, I have veterans that they closed down the Garden City, Kansas office. So those people from Elkhart, they have to drive all the way into Dodge City, Kansas, in southwest Kansas, to get to a Veterans Administration.
So you're saying the VA needs more money, it needs more doctors?
Yes, it needs more staff. I was there. I've seen it.
Yeah, how much are you campaigning across the state these days, Alvin Zantner, as you get ready for this August 5th primary? What are you doing across the state to campaign here?
Okay. Last week, I was in Kansas City, Lenexa, and I was in parade up there. Then I hit Osage City. I hit a parade in Topeka. I hit another one in Lenexa.
So you're campaigning actively, it sounds like.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm spending my money. And let me explain something to we the people. I have taken no campaign money from any of the corporations. I don't have them in my back pocket. This is from my friend, Connie Landowski, and she's from Wasilla, Alaska, where Miss Palin's from.
Mm-hmm.
And she has four vets on her side. I have four rest in peace vets on my side. And sir, here's the deal. I've been speaking actively at Farm Bureaus, Senior Citizen Centers. This is on Alvin, and this is on Connie's money.
And what are you hearing from Kansans as you get around the state, Alvin Zantner? What are they saying to you?
Number one, Kansas needs a change. We need term limits. We need somebody that will. And I'm not saying Pat Roberts hasn't done a great job in his 48 years. But we need somebody's going to listen to the Kansans and take it on back up, like Pat Roberts has done, sir.
Is Pat Roberts not listening to Kansans, Alvin?
Pat Roberts is listening, but you can't have a gentleman and running 48 years. It needs in the Senate. It needs new blood, sir. And that's the way I feel about it.
Well, what else are you hearing from Kansans at the events that you attend?
Well, I'll tell you, when I get done, sir, after I get done, I get basically a standing ovation. I can wake the people up. They talk to me about the way Kansas is being run.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately job loss. Job loss. And that's a big thing.
How do you create new jobs as a member of the U.S. Senate?
For Kansas, and I will be talking to representatives, your senators in Kansas, and I have a wonderful way to start new jobs, and if people need to listen for medical cannabis, and that would give more jobs in the farm industry.
That would create
more sales tax, and that would take a burden off of we the people.
Alvin Zanter, I want to thank you for your time today. Alvin Zanter, one of the candidates for the U.S. Senate, the Republican nomination in Kansas. Voters go to the polls on August 5th.